Exactly. I'm too uncomfortable explaining about it, because there's no fun, you see. But we can get it now and hope for the best. One question that I've been was interested in locally is this. How much integration is there, if any, in churches in Bridgeport and in this neighborhood?
Very, very little. I think it should be some percentage of 1%.
Way down.
And this is from both sides of the fence. Mm. Is that true, Jim?
Yes, with one noticeable exception, there's a church, Newfield Methodist, on the corner of Central Avenue and Stratford Avenue, which has about 10 Negro families in membership. This is a white church.
This is very large.
But this is very large, and even the large churches like United Church downtown have only one or two.
How much of that is a result of residences, the residences of the parishioners? Now, these are 10 Negro families. Are they in the same neighborhood? Is that a natural place to go to church or not?
Not necessarily. With Protestant churches, you know, area churches aren't very much a rule of thumb. So, in the case of these people at Newfield Methodist, for instance, they...
Some come from Stratford.
Yes.
They go over there. Mm-hmm. They pass Methodist. They pass, bypass churches in Stratford to go there.
How did this get started?
I don't know. I don't know.
They just wanted to go to that particular Methodist church, and that's where they've gone.
And I think there may be other reasons, too, sometimes. For example, maybe a kid who happens to be a Negro, have a white friend who goes in, and they go to the church. Or, this is just off the cuff, I guess I'm saying, is that it just may be, sometimes, Jim, that some deliberately seek out the white church to go there. Maybe one out of the 10 families. I don't know about this case.
What's bound to happen, I should imagine, somewhere along the line anyway, but you must be within resistance there, do you know?
It's rough.
You get the feeling that Newfield Methodist is different from other churches where there is this kind of small integration. I've heard since I've been in Stratford of several situations where Negro families are present, but they're not too, you know, the resistance isn't open, but it's just a sort of, what are they doing here?
More or less.
Well, this wouldn't be traced back then, say, to the pastor, the particular pastor.
I shouldn't think so. I happened to be talking to the pastor of Newfield Methodist, for instance, yesterday, and he was saying that these people have been a part of that church for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Under various pastors.
Yes.
Under various pastors.
They change every 2 or 3 years.
I think the pastor has a lot to do with it sometimes. I think, for example, of some churches where I know there's been integration, the person out of the pastor, while he was there, made them understand their home, that changes some kind of difference.
I know a woman who's the mother of the children that play with our children all the time, and she taught here in Bridgeport. She's divorced shortly after the birth of her younger child. A younger child is about 8, I think. 8 is my younger child. So, it's not very long ago she was divorced. And then she looked around for some job and she went into teaching, which she had had no special training for before, but she got it very fast. Her first job was in a school in Bridgeport. Now, I forget the name, she told me, which is in the middle of the Negro section of town. Now, what school is that?
Probably east side, probably. Elementary school?
It's elementary school, and she teaches fourth grade.
May well have been thinking, could these have been Waltersville, or could have been the other side of town. Uh-huh. Bridgeport doesn't have a Negro section as such, see?
They
have several sections that have heavy Negro concentration.
Yes, but this was, she said here, there was almost completely, the student body was almost completely Negro, she said, 90%.
Probably Lincoln or Waltersville, or the one over near Black Valley.
Even there it's difficult to tell, but you got a Catholic school in the midst, isn't it? A lot of these kids are Catholics,
yes.
They go to this
school. This school, she said, she had some, tales of horror as an appointment. But this couldn't have been very long ago she was there. Probably 6 years ago she was teaching there. And she said she couldn't take one more year of it. She said because of the fact that the sense of despair that had come over, sometimes even said brutality, you know, that you encountered. Said this. Teachers who had Just weren't putting out. Said a lot of just weren't putting out at all. Just going through the day waiting for a talent. So that's all they were doing. Waiting for the day to end, waiting for a talent. So the complete lack of an attempt. And I won't say which one particular she named one. He said really just made life intolerable for his pupils in the school. And so she couldn't take it another year. So she was one way or the other. Said that the tension was too great. Now my question is this. Would you find that kind of do you know that kind of situation in such a school now in Bridgeport, had it been improved, where the school is preponderantly Negro, is just a walk-through, where the faculty is demoralized, and I think she said there was not a single Negro teacher on the faculty when she was there. So it was completely demoralized. And so as far as attempts to really understand the child or to teach a child, so it was at a bare minimum.
Well,
she was transferred the next year, and she said, thank God for that, because she said the moral strain was just too much for her.
There are a lot of problems.
You've got not only the Negro, of course, in this situation, you have also the Puerto Ricans, you see. And I know Bessie Fry, for example, she tells about language difficulties she's had in classes of 35 and 40 and 45. And, but as far as an attempt to get through there, most of the teachers I've talked to
are trying.
From these areas, I'm trying, and I'm trying to make an attempt. I'm trying to, I don't know this woman you speak of, maybe coming to such a radically different situation. Maybe in a short time she couldn't feel it.
Well, she felt that, you know, she was still shaken by it. And it was a question of the system, but purely a system, and there's no human contact had been worked out of any human contact. She was saying, well, this is it. She was completely sold on the notion you couldn't have a segregated school that even resembled a school. That's what she said. That's teaching. And like a manager was de facto segregation, she said.
You got kids in there, Jim.
They're in Lincoln School.
It may not be the same school.
I think Roosevelt's worse than Lincoln, for example.
Because my feelings, and this is an opinion, have always been, when it comes to this whole question of de facto segregation, that the main thing we are striving for is equal education. That so often the school in a predominantly Negro area somehow becomes last on the totem pole. Lincoln School, of which we were speaking a moment ago, for instance, has a third floor condemned. The building, I know a lady who went to school there, a lady who's on several of our committees, went to school at Lincoln 40 years ago. And she said it was an old school then. The records show it's over 100 years old. She said it was always an old school. This was her expression.
she was young. She was an old school.
And she says, well, now, right today, the third floor is condemned. They have split sessions in all of kindergarten, all of first grade, and all of fifth grade there. And they're about to expand it even further, the split sessions, because of limited space. From the teachers, I found out that they are low on various supplies and certain things you have to buy out of their pockets. Well, now, to my mind, this is the biggest argument against de facto segregation, and while I don't always agree with some of the theories of some people who say put them in buses and carry them somewhere else, what they really need to do is make the education equal in every school, or else they will have a lot of more complaints about this, because the education isn't equal.
I'd add even one footnote that maybe... Not, I guess what you're saying, Jim, but about the system itself in Bridgeport, I don't care whether it's a Negro child in a predominantly Negro school or a white child, I think these towns surrounding Bridgeport have got them beat by far in many respects. This is said of kids.
You mean better schools?
Better schools. In the Methodist and Congregational churches, where they sometimes draw kids in from Bridgeport to their Sunday school, to their vacation church school, same as in our church, where we draw them in from both cities. The Stratford kids will stand out much more than the Bridgeport kids, on the same grade level.
Very definitely.
I mean, very far, far ahead. There's no comparison between
them. Now, why is that?
I think they've got a better system than the surrounding towns. Fairfield, Stratford, something.
Well, it becomes rather obvious that most Negroes settle in the big cities. This isn't just here, this is Boston, this is all over.
More and more, that's true, too, yeah.
And more and more, the people, say with the money, the people of influence, move out of the cities into the suburbs. And inevitably they build better schools, they pay the teachers better wages, they have a better system. And the child in the city, which is invariably the person in the lower economic groups, suffers. This isn't true just here, but all over.
How much protest is there about that here in Bridgeport? Is it
I sum about three words. Mm-hmm. Jim Peters, number one. Andy DeVogel, number two. And John Stapleton, a few. The individuals who stand out, who I think are really pulling me.
But otherwise, it's not. Otherwise, there's no organized.
There is, isn't there, Jim? But it's just hard to get people to get on that cart.
There's a group called Citizens Committee for the Improvement of Bridgeport Public Schools.
You mean all schools, too?
Yes. Well, now this particular committee I've referred to is Bridgeport.
Yeah, I mean, all parts
of Bridgeport,
all
right?
Parts, I'm trying to say.
And they're frustrated often by the city government because the city government doesn't consider schools a number one issue. They consider keeping the tax rate down number one issue. And in accord with that, many of the they went to work and with a lot of effort were able to get the city to hire an outstanding superintendent. But everything he asked for that would improve the system, they cut it out every year.
How many guidance counselors have you got in Bridgeport? Can you count them on? I'm sure you can on one hand.
Yeah, one time you had no full-time guidance counselors in any of the high schools.
And this is a big city like Bridgeport.
It's a big city, yeah.
Like Bridgeport. This is unheard of in some big cities like Cleveland or Philadelphia.
Let's try to see what we're doing now. Shall we try just to be sure we aren't wasting? I'd rather. You laid over another voice there as I was interrupting you. We'll be on the air again, I guess. What, you raised a question a moment ago.
On the floor.
You said the bus system. Now that doesn't apply here, I suppose, though it might at some future date begin to apply. I have very unclear in my mind about my own feelings about that. As I'm certain that the segregated school has been a bad school, you see. It has been a bad school now. And I'm certain that if I were in, say, school B and it was predominantly white school, the school A is a predominantly Negro school, and there was some shifting there, I would welcome the shift into that school. I think I would resist, instinctively resist, having my children put in the bus and hauled off arbitrarily to make a ballot somewhere clear across town for another hour on the bus. I would resist that. But I could read my own feelings now. Do you have any notions about that?
I have some very definite notions, and I hope you make it clear that many Negro leaders would disagree with me on this, although there are those who
share
this
feeling. I know
there's
a variety of feeling, yes.
I personally think, as I suggested a few moments ago, that the main thing we're after is equal education. I personally feel that the Supreme Court decision was really gotten on the wrong grounds. We don't care what grounds it was gotten on. We're glad that it came through. But I think the real grounds for it should have been the fact that the separate education wasn't equal. Well, as you know, the Supreme Court decision was what Southerners call, and rightly so, a sociological decision. It was based on the fact that it is inherently wrong for students to go to school with members of their own race. From my own experiences in going to school in Washington, D.C., and things that I have seen in other places, noting that the education was definitely not equal. It makes me realize that here in my mind, the big question is not the one of transporting, and again this is as an individual, transporting students from one place to another to have a sort of balance. In my mind, this isn't a big question at all. The big question is, do we have equal education? And with this in mind, my thoughts would be then to improve the education of our schools in predominantly Negro areas, rather than to toy with this idea of transporting them. I think this idea of transporting them is a drastic and perhaps dramatic appeal for equal education. For that reason, then, if people were demanding such things, I'd probably support them. Not that I agree that this is the answer to it, but in order to provoke those in authority to the extent that they would really make the education equal.
How do you feel about that?
I think I might, too, reject the idea in my mind, at least as first as my feeling. of taking my kids, for example, and transporting them somewhere just to make the situation, say it's integrated.
Yes.
If it's a chance for them to get a better education, then I probably would push the idea of getting my kids over if I could. And I certainly could respect anybody's opinion who felt that they didn't want their kid to be transferred over to a certain school that wasn't quite up to the level of a school where the kids were already going. I say that, Jim, out of a background, too, because I was transferred to a certain high school, for example. They had enough counselors there to go through the whole student body in the junior high school to figure what high school you ought to go to. And it just so happened all the high schools weren't equal in the city. They just weren't. And they picked certain students to go to certain ones and said, you'll probably make out better here, you there, regardless of their color, race, and so forth.
And regardless of their home location.
And regardless of their home location, my traveling distance was something like 80-some blocks from my home. It'd take an hour and a half to get to.
That's a lot of time to kid's life.
Of course, the thing that came out there, this was the odd thing. In this particular high school, where they had about 2,200 boys, no girls, about 2,000 of these kids were Jewish kids, mm-hmm. who just happened to be that the Jewish kids in Philadelphia were better students and scholars than the Italians, the Negroes, and all the rest of them, and could make the better grades and pass the test better. So they all got sent to this school. Now somebody might have hollered right away, what are you doing? You're segregating the Jews over here at this particular school?
Yes.
No, they would have said, no, we send them there because we feel that this meets the individual's capabilities rather than anything else.
Well, I don't think
this thing too much. I think that too much, as you say, Jim, just on one line of thought and think of one solution when perhaps there are about five or six.
You made a brief mention of a time element. I just want to mention here for the record, my wife went to high school traveling 23 miles one way every day. The bus left at 7:30 and made about a 40-mile trip around, picking up other students, going from Middleburg, Virginia, to a place called Leesburg.
Yeah.
There was a school much closer, but in Virginia, schools are segregated, and this was the closest Negro school.
Yeah, that's quite a trip.
Every day, too.
Every day, one way.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Now, what about looking at another aspect of it? Say, a city like Washington, which is is predominantly a Negro city now, how can you possibly then work out balanced schools?
It's your hometown, Jim. You can talk.
On this business of transferring, you see, by mandate from the school board, take 50 or 60 white people who are supposed to go to that school. Where are you going to get them in Washington?
Yeah, that's good.
If this tendency continues, you see, how can you do it?
Of course, it couldn't. It couldn't be done in Washington. There's no question about it. The school system in Washington at last figures is something like 76% Negro.
I read the figures last year.
It's gone up every year. So this definitely couldn't be done in Washington and in many other places where it would be not only illogical but rather impractical. Again, I say, I think the people who are pushing for this really want what I want, equal education. I think this is just a mechanism they're using to try to force
it.
I don't think anybody would quibble about going to Howard University or Tuskegee if they felt they were getting an equal education there that they got at University of Alabama or somewhere else. If they felt that this was a top-notch college, and they felt maybe this was a top-notch high school.
That reminds me of something that Franklin Frazier has in his big book, you know, about the future of the American Negro college and university. This connection. He expresses some doubts about its future.
Of course, they're just about filled to capacity, all of them.
Yes.
They're not wanting for students now.
No, they're not wanting for students.
And like West Virginia took in Negroes before this segregation movement really gained impetus, I think if these schools continue to improve, we'll find some white students coming in, not just exchange students.
Mm-hmm.
I think the future of the Negro College, this is prejudice again, because
yeah.
I went there, will always be pretty safe.
Mm-hmm.
There are roots there for the Negro that he can't possibly get if he goes to Yale or if he goes to any other school. I feel he misses something when he misses the chance to feel a sense of his oneness with his people, with his history, a chance to feel the problems of Negroes from all over the South.
As long as there's a Negro in this country, I think he'll welcome a many of them will welcome a chance to send their kids a Negro.
Where did you go to school? You went
Virginia Union in Richmond.
Virginia Union. Then you went to Harper, didn't you?
No, then I went to Crozer in Chester, then I went to Harper.
I don't know.
Yeah. But
where did you go, sir?
Howard University.
Do you feel that, Jim?
Yeah. Do you have any courses with Mr. Frazier?
Once. Just once. Back in, it must have been 12 years ago.
I'll welcome the chance to send my kids to a Negro college for their undergraduate education. I think they can get enough there to qualify them for any field of graduate work they want to do. As long as I know that the college send them to will be accredited enough for their transfer to be accepted in white college afterwards, so-called white college.
I heard him lecture, back in the late 40s, I guess, rather than informal, not a big formal public lecture, but an informal kind of a conversation seminar thing for about 2 hours once. He was very impressive. He was very impressive.
And they say he was better when he was a lot younger. You know, when he was, they say he was a lot better.
Well, this was about 17 years ago, I heard him, I guess.
Yes.
Oh, like 16 or 17 years ago.
Yeah, you heard him, I guess.
He was wonderful.
And this is odd too, isn't it? There's a lot of the Negroes who were born in the North, or either have been here for a long while, who are rearing their kids in the North, will ask a guy like me, perhaps a guy like Jim, why did you go to a Negro college? And they'll wonder, why am I going to send my kid there? Maybe tuition was lower for one thing. But I think beyond that, many of the graduates of Negro colleges feel very keenly and deeply a need for a sense of roots among the Negroes to feel that they have a history, a past, a heritage. And for the most part, with very few Negroes teaching history or anything else on white faculties, anything else in the North, for the most part, I don't think they get it anywhere except in a good Negro college in the South. And I think it makes a difference. Almost every one of our leaders in this present struggle who is really in the forefront of this thing has spent some time in a Negro college, and many of them didn't have to do it. I mean today, and I think tomorrow, we need to see great.
This relates in a kind of a backhand way, doesn't it, to the fabricated history that the black Muslims put out. Well, you have a false history, I mean a made up history. Isn't that rather the case there, as opposed to the made up history of the Negro race, rather than a true history, but it appeals, it makes the same appeal to the need to identify yourself. And
yes, the same thing Fox was just saying, an article we read.
What was that?
We just read an article by Sam Proctor, who's president of the Union, president of North Carolina A&T, and who now is with the Peace Corps. Sam Proctor sort of saying too that we sort of, for a while, imitated the white man's world, had a sort of dollhouse society life. But really, he's saying that we had no sense of our real roots and our real heritage. He said, no sense of any kind of pride that could sound a real bell.
He says we lost our identity, and I'm quoting Proctor.
Yes.
We lost our identity, our names, our songs, our past.
We lost everything.
We knew no world but the white world of North America. So for years, one imitated its institution, its culture, and its sins. Across the tracks, on the other side of town, we had little of everything they had. And until World War II, this was the story. These two communities existing side by side with the same trappings and the same veneer.
Yes, that's undoubtedly true. But now, could you tell me what the difference, what the option is now? What the difference is now in terms of the awareness of the Negro's heritage? Now, what is the new awareness? Could you undertake to say that?
I think I postulate one thing quickly, just off the top.
Yes.
And I certainly felt this. Here's the difference, for example, and this is pretty sort of plainly, I guess, and simply. I'm walking down the street in the South, and there's a man of color like I am. I speak, he speaks back. up to 4 or 5 years ago, I walked down the street in the North. I speak to a man of color. He may or may not speak to me. You see what I mean? But now I speak and almost everybody speaks. And it's all right to feel a consciousness of kind based on the fact that no one is beginning to feel himself outside of this thing.
Yes.
We all feel that we're part of this time.
Yes.
I think this is part of this new feeling on the Negro all over the country. And that sounds like a little thing, but this has been a big jump for some folks who don't walk with us on picket lines or who used to wouldn't even want to be identified, and still some don't. Just the Jackie Robinson players, they want to be there, Jim.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yes.
But at least they're token a bit now. This feeling of wonders means a whole lot, I think, to our people.
Tell me this. That's a little bit like, back to Frazier again. His discussion of the class structure of Negro society, you remember? And the ambivalent feeling that the upper class has about the whole question of integration in society. That whole they're very deep ambivalence. He points out or indicates in the Negro upper class, where if you have integration, there's a fear of a loss of status in terms of integration. You know how. Frazier argument on that.
This is the expression Bill said a few minutes ago.
But this fear, I think, is dwindling. I'm in a doctor's office, Yasser, the other day, and I pick up his medical journal. The doctors are out there marching and fighting for integration. They're not thinking about losing status. They're going to gain it and accept it. The teachers in the South, the heck with this school. The heck with this system. If I lose my job, I'll find another. In fact, they don't have any choice but their kids march. They're going to lose their jobs anyway, sooner or later.
And of course, this is a little, you find more of this in the South, of what you're speaking of here, this oneness of identity than you do in the North. What I referred to a few minutes ago was some people who wouldn't dare go to Birmingham under any circumstances and hear Dr. King or anyone else. And these people who wouldn't even go to Washington in the March on Washington. But when Jackie Robinson had Martin Luther King and Roy Wilkins out in his lawn on a Sunday afternoon last month, they were there as a sort of a social set apart from the people fighting. But they are in the minority.
Right.
But they are in the tremendous minority, even in the North.
Even that's dwindling now.
Definitely.
Yeah.
That's dwindling.
Even they are sort of moving to the edge of the circle. They're not committed. Not really. It's still a social matter of identification. But when they see guys like Dr. W.G. Dr. Anderson, identifying prominent physician, they see outstanding attorneys and lawyers, they begin to think, at least most of them do, but, and they see outstanding personalities like Lena Horne and Sammy Davis Jr.
Let me ask, cut back a moment on the same line of thought. You're saying heritage and history, and the white professor of history as opposed to a Negro professor of history would be a big some difference. The questions in my mind, what do you mean by the how much that is not, you see, in the Western Judeo-Christian tradition, you see, does the Negro, after the moment of transport from Africa, what did he maintain? What did he keep? I know this is a debate. I mean, I've read Du Bois on this. I've read Frazier. I've read different people on this. I know it's a real debate among Negro historians, between Negro historians. Just take two, Frazier and Du Bois, take a very different view, contradictory view.
And do we really know how much?
They take different views entirely.
A fellow comes here from Africa, for example, from Ghana. He spends a day, a couple weekends with us, and one day in church, he's sitting down there and our organist is playing songs. He can play the piano too. He's been a teacher over there. And suddenly he feels a kinship with the music that we're playing. It's an amazing thing, he says. He said, this is it. You see? And there's something in the soul of the African, I think that's in the soul of the American Negro, that hasn't quite been covered up or hidden by the fact that we've imitated the white man for so long. And I think this is something I don't think you can quite put your finger on or quite isolate or quite characterize in words, but I think it's there and I think you feel it more than anything else. This is a part of it.